Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am ACGS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Limark Technical Net has been going strong for over 44 years. And every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we all join together our radios to chat a bit, to try to explain things to each other, to learn from each other, teach each other.
Yeah.
Thank you all for coming by again this Sunday night at 8 p.m., especially this edition is the Father's edition. So have Father's Day to all you fathers out there. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I will give you the Yule links. If you would like to contact me via email, that would be either for mail questions that you'd normally ask during the technical net, but if you were out of radio contact, you could email them, and we'd read them, and you'd listen to the responses. Or if you have a TechNet puzzle, we used one last week. There is a rare attendee. So if you have an interesting puzzle that you'd like to share with us, send it to me, and I'll take a look at it. And if it's appropriate, I'll use it for one of these Sunday nights. Also, if something happens in the news in a technical aspect that you have a good understanding of, and you'd like to share your understanding with the rest of us, you can contact me, and we can arrange for that to happen. Or I'd like you to poke at Paul and ask him to take some space in that related story and comment on it. You could, of course, contact him directly. His email address is spacenetboard@gmail.com. But you can reach me by email. My email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. We also maintain a lot of cut-and-paste article links, YouTubes of interest throughout the week, and I post them for the weekend, and they stay there for the rest of the next year or two or three or four. Get to that link page, you just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room. It's been real quiet lately, but you can access by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com. And we have an audio stream on the internet of Technical Net. I keep it live the rest of the week, so you can listen in to the Glen Oaks repeater. To get there, you just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will get you there. And I always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great website. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September 2006. So if you're curious of what Technical Net sounded like, want to hear wisdom from hams that have either moved away from the area or become silent, please check out that site. Let me drop for a second. I will tell you what we got planned. Okay, for the most part, it's going to be, the regular standard issue. I have a couple of little comments to make before we start it, though. Then we'll get into the technical questions, comments, and topics for discussion. I will ask interested people to hit that push to talk, give me your first name and your call sign, whether it's a question or comment, whether it's amateur radio related or non-amateur. I would like the first few questions, hopefully, to be related to amateur radio, since this is an amateur radio net. Hopefully, that should take us to about 10:15. Paul WS2 will present the SpaceNet report till approximately 11 o'clock. I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the fun week. So that's the plan. If laws of physics continue, the repeat doesn't choke, or my shack technology doesn't choke. Both have been known to happen. So see what happens. Let me drop for a second, and I'll give you my opening little comment. Okay. I assume a lot of you people do this. I just decided rather recently. I've talked before about magazine subscriptions. We've kind of yelled at the ARRL, charging a lot more money just to maintain a subscription. And I've mentioned that I miss all of the magazines that come and gone. The Internet era has been a boon in many ways, and I wouldn't kind of track on it, but it has decimated the publication industry, especially when it comes to magazines. A lot of magazines have come and gone. And you may have noticed, it's kind of difficult to notice. I subscribe to CQ magazine, and getting Maddie from a subscription was very erratic. I haven't received a magazine from them in over about 6 months. And last month I discovered that the publisher had become a silent key. And on further investigations, I discovered that CQ Magazine has just kind of faded to the ether. Even the website is gone now. So another magazine by us. I also subscribe to Nuts and Bolts, and they had a rather erratic subscription problem. I think my last issue that I got a month or so ago was dated 2022, because they have missed so many issues. So, as I've mentioned before, I really appreciate the magazines. Talk to them. Give them money, because they will starve and die and fade away, never to be seen again. So, keep that in mind. I know a lot of people read magazines secondhand. Their friends give them the ones that they subscribe to. That doesn't give the companies that publish these magazines any need to support themselves. So, if you really love a magazine, consider subscribing to it. Any comments on this, feel free, hit that push to talk.
This is KC2ISU broadcasting on Echo Link. Just got on.
Okay, very good, YFU. Any comments, or are you just throwing your call out that you had arrived?
I don't have any comments at this time. I'm going to be on the side listening, and if I do, I will gladly join in.
Okay, very good, sir. Anyway, I will assume that there's no comments. Again, I implore you guys, if you do like magazines and you're reading your friends' hand-me-downs, do consider subscribing to the magazine, because eventually, if not enough people pay for the subscription, they'll just go out of business and your friend won't be able to give you his second-hand copies. Anyway, any last responses before we move on to the main segment of the technical net? Okay, very well. I'll consider that a thank you, no thank you. Once again, I'm AC2GS. My name is Roy. This is the Longmark Technical Net, and we're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics that they'd like to discuss, please hit that push to talk and give me your first name and your call sign.
I have a question for you. Do you have a suggestion on a good handheld? I have a Yasu right now, but I'm looking for maybe a Bofang or something other than that might, you know, be easier and better to use. Any suggestions?
Can I add a first name, sir?
This is KC2YFU. It's Alan.
Okay, Alan. Usually the way that we handle these things on the technical net is we ask for a bunch of people to kind of sign in at the beginning and have questions or times for discussion. You know, it takes about sometimes 2-3 minutes or so. And then after we run through the list, we'll start at the top of it. So I put you on the list. And we'll get to you real soon, but I just want to find out if there's anyone else who'd like to put their name on tonight's list, okay?
Did you acknowledge me?
Yes, Wesley, I recognize you as well. You're on the list. Is it for a ham-related topic or a non-ham-related topic?
Ham-related topic and a few non-ham-related topics.
Okay, so if you don't mind, we'll probably do Alan first, and then you do you next, or depending upon if anyone has any other questions, rather than break up your portion into one question of ham-related and the other not. Okay?
Okay.
Once again, C2GS, and we're calling for questions or comments for tonight's technical net. So if there's anyone else who'd like to put their name on the list for tonight, please have push to talk. Give me your information.
November 2, Zulu Charlie John.
Hello, John. Long time no hear. I've seen you on the list that I have little windows for. I haven't heard you in a while. Hopeful as well.
Yeah, all is very well. I've been copying. I was on there last week. Just a very good, lively discussion. And matter of fact, my question has sort of something to do with what you discussed last week, Sam, related.
Okay, but John, I have you on the list. Anyone else want to go on the list for tonight? Of course, you could go on the list later on. But if you want to kind of fix your position now rather than wait, hit that to talk, give me your first name and your call sign. Okay, I heard a little noise, but I don't think it was audio. Well, as I said, you can always ask questions as the night progresses. Alice, KC2YFU. It sort of depends upon what you're looking for a handheld. If you're looking to save your money, then Balfog is okay. It's certainly inexpensive. You lose it, you know, there's no real crying. The last price I saw was about $35. I mean, I have handy toys where the leather case is a lot more expensive than that. Problems with Balfogs, as has been discussed in the past, you know, they're not all equal. Some of them are kind of locked into an ultra-narrow bandwidth that can be fixed because it's in the firmware. Sometimes the output power is a little questionable. It's got the greatest specs in the world, but again, it's dirt cheap. The front end is kind of open, so anything transmitting anywhere near you is probably going to be sensitive. But again, if you're looking for an inexpensive piece of equipment, Balfog is acceptable. It's also a little annoying to learn how to field program it, and you can get software off of the internet. Chirp is free, and if you figure out how to get it to work with Chirp, you can program it with your computer. If you're looking for something a little bit more sturdy, it then depends upon whether or not you're interested in any kind of digital voice mode. If you get another Yaesu, you probably will have access to Yaesu's proprietary fusion technology. If you buy an Icom eTalkie, you'll have access to Icom's proprietary T-Star. And if you buy something like an Anytalk, which is very, very popular, I believe, I have one myself, and sturdy, reasonably handy talking, you'll have access to DMR gateways and such. So it sort of depends upon what price point you want to spend, how many features you want or need, and if you are interested in a digital voice mode, which one, because there's no handy talkie that handles all three of them as of yet. So does that kind of solve your problem now, or do you have any further questions related to this?
Anytone. I was looking at that, looking for something like a 10 watt that had different abilities on it, and I'm kind of new to it, but I'm also old in my ham for a while, but I haven't been able to use it because of work a lot. And so I'm kind of still new to it after all this time, and I'm trying to figure out where to go, because when I was deployed to Colorado, I picked a Yaesu, and now I'm looking to add to it and maybe do the Anytone. That was a radio I heard about. I don't know which one to go for, though.
Well, again, I think primarily the most important thing is to decide whether you want to have access to one of the many digital voice modes or not. A lot of people really like DMR digital. And usually, in the old days, they would go on a DMR repeater. Limark has a DMR repeater. But in addition, over the last 7-8 years, they have developed hotspots, which are ways of getting onto digital voice mode gateways through the internet. So instead of using your handy talkie to talk to a repeater and have the repeater link to the internet and talk to other DMR repeaters. You link your handy talkie to a hotspot in your house that connects to your ISP internet provider, and it connects to the gateways, and you go local, so you don't have to tie up a local repeater who selects the gateway. DMR is probably the most popular way of doing that, but you can handle it with Fusion and T-Star as well. There are different hotspots that are capable of cross-connecting so that you can, with something like the OpenSpot, you can use any voice mode, T-Star, Fusion, or DMR to connect to any gateway, whether it's an A-Fusion, D-Star, or DMR. So, in spots and such, any tones are very, very popular. They go for, I think, about $260 or so. So they're a lot more expensive than bow phones, which are just analog. They're only 5 watts. Most talkies tend to be 5 watts. There are a few out there that are spec to be 7 watts. I don't think there's that much of a big difference between the two. So I don't think you could particularly go wrong with an Anytone. I own one myself, and if you ever find yourself on a hotspot gateway, you'll end up with at least a 70% chance of the guy on the other end having an Anytone as well.
Okay, that's a lot of information I have to now digest and go take a look at that and come up with what I'm doing. I mean, I'm not really about money much. I'm worried more about getting something that would be functional enough. So you gave me a lot to think about, and I'm going to go and start doing my research. I thank you very much for your insight and all the information. This is KC2YS going to the site. I hope you have a good evening. Good evening to all. I'll be monitoring.
Well, thank you, Alan. I appreciate your participation tonight on the Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., so down the road, if you have a further question, feel free to come back and ask us. And, you know, if you would like, if you decide on the Anytone or something else and want to tell us what you've discovered and share it with the rest of us, we'd love to hear about it. So I wish you good luck.
Thank you very much, and I'll keep you updated. I didn't even know that this Technical Net was there, so it was just, I stumbled across it tonight, and it was a great thing to cross. Thank you.
You're welcome, Alan. Yeah, we've been here about 44-plus years. Not necessarily always on Echolink. I don't know when we got the Echolink. We're on All-Star, Echolink, and IRLP for repeater-to-repeater links. Anyway, moving on to our next person on the list, John, N2ZC. What's your question tonight, John?
Yeah, thank you, Roy. Good evening. Good evening to the net. I hope everybody's doing fine. I was copying last week, Roy, and you had said something that really piqued my curiosity. And I mentioned to someone, apologize, I meant to, and with a lot of things, we just don't get to it. But it has to do with where it far afield. And you had said something that, and I don't want to misquote you, so I believe what you said, that was we could put antennas in the far field, and we measure no drain on the signal. But if we put them in the near field, actually measure a power loss at the transmitter. Now, I hope I got that right with that. And if it did, I just wanted to expand on that. Is the power loss from the transmitter itself that we're measuring, or are we taking other measurements at all?
No, the power drain, I would rather call it, come from your transmitter. In that, in the far field, you put out whatever you put out. There's no additional loading experienced by the antenna by other antennas in the far field. In the near field, it actually loads the antenna more and more, so it draws more power from your transmitter. Another term that's often used synonymous with near field is transformer field, because its characteristics are similar to the way that a transformer works. So the more power you draw on the secondary coil on a transformer, the more current goes through the primary coil. So it's the same type of phenomena as if you're tapping into the electromagnetic field in the far field, it doesn't draw an additional power. It doesn't increase the load as seen by the transmitter.
All right, that's all. We should clear that up. I got a visual on that as you were talking, and it almost seems to me it almost looked like, you know, series circuit out as comparison. I know you're saying the transformer effect less, but just like when you put a resistor in a circuit, you know, then that voltage drop in there, you know, it's tapping into it, play is like being series with it. Very interesting, right? And I will do some more research on it. Again, sometimes you listen to this set and the that you were aware of that are quite fascinating pop up. Really enjoyed last week, and again.
Okay, very good. Yeah, the near field, far field is a really strange concept that isn't quantum mechanical for a change, because I realize that some people get nosebleeds if I bring up quantum mechanics or I bring up relativity. But near field, far field goes back to classic radio electronics. So there's a lot of very curious phenomena that goes on with near field and far field. I mentioned last week, most electromagnetic waves in space, which, you know, are far field electromagnetic waves, have the magnetic and the electric fields in synchronization. So when the magnetic field is maximum, the electric field is maximum. So that's a synchronized phase electromagnetic field. Those type of fields propagate into infinity. They can go from one end of the universe to the other end as long as they're not obstructed by anything on their path. In the near field, though, a lot of the electromagnetic waves are not in phase that way. They're sometimes in 90-degree or orthogonal phase with each other. And those type of electromagnetic waves have different characteristics. They give you the transformer field effect type of thing of dissipating greater loads in the near field. And they also attenuate much more rapid than regular far field electromagnetic waves. So it's a fascinating subject. So one day when you have nothing better to do, you know, Google near field and read through. I'm sure you'll find it fascinating.
Yeah, definitely plan to. And just as a quick aside, have you heard any of this, have you heard anything about a guy by the name of Terrence Howard? He's coming out. I think he's actually just rehashing very old movies and claiming they're his own and putting a little twist on it. Some of it is very interesting, and he made some statements about electromagnetism, which I found very interesting. I don't have any knowledge that give an opinion on it, but he claims that we've got a lot of it wrong, etc. And let me just ask you, have you heard about him or any of his statements?
Yes, Terrence Tech is a simply successful actor. Unfortunately, he seems to be a pathological narcissist who has delusions of his own understanding of the world. He does not demonstrate any even basic understanding of physics, and 99% of what he says is gibberish and nonsense. His thing, usually, when I've seen him discuss, is he believes that 1 times 1 equals 2. So that kind of gives it all away.
I did see a lot of his stuff is stuff that was written about a long time ago. His folks, but sometimes you don't get that validity. He's trying to claim it's his own and put a twist on it. When he was talking about magnetism, though, saying that we have it wrong, it's not an attractive force, pulsive force, it's trying to expand. And he gave an interesting illustration with a water hose. There's a reason magnets repel. If you put water hoses that are crowding out water close to each other, they're pushing apart. But if you take one and put it towards the back of the other one, you know, now it's pushing in, so it'll give it more stuff. And, you know, again, since we don't have a total grasp, it seems, on electromagnetism and everything, I always find it interesting. You never know. And sometimes it takes a nut to get the ball rolling.
Well, you know, I mean, usually nuts don't get balls rolling. They roll in their own heads. Magnetism is not purely a repulsive force. Magnetism, in the same way as electrical charge, is both attractive and repulsive. The same magnetic poles repel each other, opposite poles attract each other. Same way that same charge, electrostatic charge, repels each other, and different charges attract each other. So you've got it entirely wrong. I don't think you learn anything except the problematic mind of a borderline psychotic. Fortunately, it doesn't really interact with his ability to act. Acting is kind of playing make-believe. So I guess his entire theory. He is a bit of a crank. He does send these things all over the place and wonders why people tell him it's nonsense. Tyson, I forget the guy, the science popularist who's, thinks he's the next Carl Sagan, did a little YouTube where he reads Terrence Howard's thesis, and he actually critiqued it and kind of pulled it apart. And he was somewhat gentle, but still Terrence kind of took it badly. So I wouldn't worry myself with anything that Terrence has to say. Some people kind of go back to the 1800s, unfortunately, before quantum mechanics was understood, and there were a lot of problems with Newtonian physics, and they went down little rabbit holes that weren't really useful. He's not really doing that. He's sort of making it up on his own. He's basically having a scientific riff where most of his words are gibberish. If you knew what the words meant, he apparently doesn't know what most of those words mean. So he hasn't hurt anyone, so he's never needed hospitalization. As far as his theories are involved, they're all gibberish and nonsense.
Okay, good. Thanks for that perspective on it, Ben. All right, Roy, as always, thanks, and I'm going to sit back and enjoy the rest of the night.
Okay, very good, John. Thank you for participating, as always. So, Wes, that's
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to start with more complex, talking about 630 meters band. So, this band was, is 472 to 479 kHz. And it was approved in 2017, allocated by the FCC, right? And it's not only United States of America, it's entire Europe that has that frequency of ham radio operation. And all regulations are ready for that to be used in Japan. I'm going to use a little bit lower power right now, make sure that you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay. So, it happened that this radio started to be more and more popular with ham radio operators around the world, and I was interested, does it work, and eventually how to use it. And what antennas could you use? So imagine that you have, I'm reading right now, the 630 meters antenna that it has 67 feet with the aluminum tubing and with 8 wires ranging from 35 to 50 feet connected to the tower, sloping outward with perimeter wire connected to the end, resonating circuit and switch via vacuum. And then you have a series induction vacuum variable capacitor. You could use this on also on 104 kilohertz, if I remember. This is 2,200 meters or 2,200 meters band using variometer. If you guys remember those glass capacitors, variable capacitors operated with motor, those are being used quite expensive. But there is much cheaper way to go around. And cheaper to go around is 2 grand rounds. Remember, there was some time ago when I said about the antenna, they have a piece of wire horizontally to the left or horizontally to the right, and it's granted. So actually, you have a granted antenna. And I remember there was one station, I believe there was Paul, when I said that at a frequency of 47 kilohertz, you could hear the radio stations. That was quite a time ago. And then he went with his radio gear, and he found that it's 60 and 70 kilohertz, and even in this region you could hear the radio stations as well, which none of the radio stations works. It is probably harmonic, low harmonic of it. But anyhow, okay, I think I have to use a little bit more power. So, do you have a 2 grand rod, 20 meters apart in the ground, connected to amplifier, the wire running at most about 1.5 meter, which is like 6 feet above the ground, along, you get ERP in less than 10 milliwatts. From the 10 watt power amplifier. So that was the technique that was used for the antenna of 2 grand. And that was in Europe from England, but the guy was to hear most of the European stations. And then I thought about the radio, what radio could we use, because it's not much of a choice. And I found that ICOM 706 Mark 1 was used for that. And was when it was unblocked, because you can unblock certain frequencies without any change, was 472 kilohertz. But usually it is being done that the 3.5 megahertz is transverted with converter to the frequency. I wonder if you have any information about that. Back to you.
Well, I mean, we've talked a few times about they call themselves loafers. They're low frequency enthusiasts. Up until recently, the Navy held on to those frequencies because their submarines sometimes use them, although they were transitioning to more sophisticated means of communication. So, you could get an experimental license to play around those frequencies, and there were a bunch of limitations, and then finally the Navy said, you know, guys, we really don't need these frequencies that much, and the FCC kind of gave the general amateur radio operator as under very strict limitations of how much power output you could possibly throw into it. And there are people playing around with it. I don't really think I would consider it a popular band. Unfortunately, I don't know if I would find any band that's particularly popular. It seems that the use of the amateur radio bands kind of drop every year by a little bit here, a little bit there. You were mentioning 60 kilohertz. 60 kilohertz, there's a major transmitter in Colorado. It's WWB. It transmits at 60 kilohertz. That's the frequency that supposedly synchronizes people's atomic clocks. So that's still going, although I have read that one of the transmitter circuits failed, and so it's operating at a somewhat lower output amplitude than it usually runs. So I found that of interest. But that's about all that I know. I've never really been that interested in low frequency. The engines tend to be highly inefficient for obvious reasons, that the mechanical, relatively high efficiency standards for those bandwidth would be humongous. So all kinds of different low efficiency antennas have been used. Signals have been heard and documented, and experimenters play with it. But I don't know. The rest of the ham bands are enough for me personally. I don't really know what I would do. And we talked maybe about 6 months ago about the signal symbol rate. As you decrease the frequency that you're operating on, and you decrease the bandwidth of the signal that you're able to do because of the decreased bandwidth of the signal, you basically have to decrease the symbol rate. So that's why a 6 kilohertz signal from WWBB can only give people the time of the day and the date with a bit stream that runs the most part of a whole minute. So, where I could say it's 8:41, that's what, a couple, 2-3 seconds. But 60 kilohertz, it takes a minute.
Okay, so with the antennas, so we could have a humongous antenna for it, and at 630 meters, actually going to the FCC plan. So the history of those two bands was 2017. In March 28, the FCC adopted the rules for 135.7 to 137.8 kilohertz, which is 2200 meters, and then later on for 472 kilohertz, which is 630 meters. So now those two bands are available. I also have the Wikipedia article, and it says that that band was allocated by International Telecommunication Union to amateur radio operators and so on. So it's plenty of reading about that. I'll come back to the end. Okay. So I mentioned the humongous antenna, and then I mentioned that we could have a 20 meters left, 20 meters right, a horizontal dipole that is grounded at the ends of it, and those two inner ends are connected to the transmitter, and you could use it. The efficiency is not great, but 3.5%, but we should talk about propagation characteristic of that band, which is quite good. So you could have several hundred of kilometers, which is 700 of the miles during the day, a good reception for the stations. That frequency was used previously and is still used for AM radios, but right now we have more efficient modes, which is SSB, single side band, and CW. And bound digital techniques, and those are really good. So the antenna for it could be horizontal dipole. I mean, horizontal dipole, 300 meters long is option. And we talk about ground wave. Dr. Roy doesn't like the term surface wave, but it's okay. So, it is lucky for ham radio operator to have some sort of vertical, even though it might be 1% efficient or even less than that. So yes, it is becoming quite a popular right now, especially in especially that you can use existing ham radio rigs by opening that there are plenty of manuals saying how to unblock the forbidden presses on the radio, then you could use that on the legal bands approved by the FCC. Thank you.
Okay. We've kind of discussed this in the past, many times, matter of fact, so I'm not quite sure what the new news is.
No, I just talked about the news you see about the television, talking about the robot bars, talking about the antenna, talking about the news. So, I should go. Again, I found 706 Mark I, that is proven one that was used for the communication. There is even a video for it. And I have another video, which is 432 kilohertz, WSPR, TXRX, with earth electrodes. And it's and audio amateur, and that's the actual design for 432 WSPR. Millimeters apart in ground, and he in this video is bringing the example. Now I can see another.
They come in solid, they come in liquid, and they come in gaseous form. You might, how you want to go about it, and there's a lot of ways to skin that cat.
Okay, so we have a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen that we could use. We have solid propellant, which could be aluminum powder, ammonium perfluoride as an oxidizer. But that's another question that I have is, well, actually, hypergolic propellants, all of them, the hydrazine and monomethyl hydrazine and others. But the question is, actually, diamantyl hydrazine is used with nitrogen, if I remember correctly. But the question is, the ISS, I assume they have escape valves in case of emergency. How they store the oxidizers?
Okay, well, that's getting into the nitty-gritty that I don't really know. So Paul Round, he can answer you what propellant method they've chosen for escape thrusters.
Yeah, so Polly's still not at home. Okay.
I guess not.
Okay, do you have any knowledge about escape capsules for ISS?
None whatsoever.
Yes, I assume that they should have them ready in case of emergency. So I'm gonna work with that. Actually, hydrogen. I'm not sure how did they manage that, because hydrogen mixed even with this small amount of ordinary air is extremely flammable. How do they manage that, especially when they are launching the rocket?
Well, my understanding is there are two different chambers. They're not mixed. It's a propulsion unit that the hydrogen and oxygen have a mixing chamber and an ignition system. Because if you have a canister filled with hydrogen and no oxygen, it's not going packed with other hydrogen. So it's a simple matter of not mixing it until ready to be used.
Okay, so we're going to wait for Paul to show up with that. For you, Dr. Roy, who invented photons and does what exist?
Okay, a photon is a particle of electromagnetic energy. We're going to veer back into quantum mechanics, which I mentioned earlier, gives some people a nosebleed. The problem is that there is a wave-particle duality when it comes to things like this. So in quantum mechanics, there are things that are characterized as particles, they're photons. The wave-like characteristics of electromagnetic waves are electromagnetic waves, and the problem is sometimes electromagnetic wave photons act as particles and other times as waves. And the ultimate reason, unfortunately, is because it is neither fundamentally a particle nor a wave, but something a wee bit esoteric that can be seen to act as either. And if, unfortunately, you really want to go into the nitty-gritty, it's excitation of a fundamental quantum field, which is the electromagnetic field. So there are multiple quantum fields embedded within space-time. They can be in a neutral position, or they can be energized. If you energize the electromagnetic field to a certain point, it demonstrates particle-like or wave-like phenomena of electromagnetic energy. We could go really down a deep rabbit hole with this one.
So should we say that when we put charge in motion, then we have electromagnetic waves? It is carried on by photons. True or false?
Again, sort of true, because, again, sometimes it acts as a particle, sometimes it acts as a wave. It's the same, but it's measured with different characteristics because the underlying nature of them, again, is an excitation in a local space-time field, which is a little bit more complicated than is it a photon or an electromagnetic wave.
Okay, who invented for photon and when?
I would have to look that up. I would guess the early 20th century, because that's when Max Planck really started quantum mechanics. He discovered black body radiation equation, which is inherently quantum mechanical in nature. He did it, unfortunately for him, not with a full understanding of how Planck's equation works. He kind of just played around with the equation until they gave him the same experimental results, and then to spend the next 10, 15 years explaining why the equation gave the proper results, which was the birth of quantum mechanics. So people kind of learned about wave-particle duality and the headache that produces.
Okay. So December 18, 1926. Maybe I start from what you mentioned, Max Planck and Albert Einstein. So we have eternal physics that is introducing a notion of quanta. The Einstein paper in 1905 dealt with particle shell of light, but didn't call those particles photons. So then we have something that is not related to Albert Einstein, and this American who actually used for the first time that.
Okay,
so we have an
issue
of Weymouth, Massachusetts, and the guy, our name was Gilbert Newton Lewis. Gilbert Newton Lewis. I'm not sure, but I think he was related to Newton. Okay, so the guy did a public school at 9 to 14 in University of Nebraska, and then a few years later he transferred to Harvard College, completed his PhD, and in 1899, when he was 24, he here in Germany. Then, of course, Albert Einstein was German. I mean, Jewish, but he was German. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't know. You kind of flung a lot of stuff. His name was not Gilbert Newton Lewis. His Gilbert Norton Lewis. So there's Norton in his name. And the chances of anyone being directly related to Isaac Newton is apparently zero, because the story goes that when he passed away, he was a virgin. So no Newtons for you. But it's primarily based on Albert Einstein's photo effect, which is one of his two Nobel Prizes. The concept of a particle of light, quantum of light. And again, once they started to think in terms of quantum mechanics, they're talking about a quanta of everything. And so light quantum is primarily based on Einstein's photoelectric effect. Lewis, gave it a nice name, which is always good, because physicists are infamous for deciding on really bad names. The origin of the word quark.
As far as the last name, I have APS 125 in front of me. So, it is pure form. It says Gilbert Lewis, and actually photon became popular because of the a journal of Nature, and it says Gilbert Newton, not Norton, Gilbert Newton Lewis. But thank you for telling me that Newton was virgin. Back to you.
Well, where I kind of looked it up, it said Norton, but I'll look it up again. We'll see.
Yeah, please. So I'm going to continue in the meantime. Okay. In 1904, Lewis moved to Philippines and became head of Bureau of Science Units, Weights and Measures, and held the post for 1 year. And then he returned to Boston and took faculty position in MIT. In 1912, he joined faculty University of California, Berkeley, where he spent most of his scientific career. He became, actually, he was fascinated with thermodynamics and chemical equilibrium. He wrote a number of papers. And then we have a year 1913, when we have the rising star, Einstein, who was able to propose alternative derivation mass energy equivalents from quite new and now very much established quantum physics. So in 1916, the work called chemical bonding, particularly the notion of covalent bonds, and he used the wording, the atom and the molecule. So in 1923, the paper on the electricity of acid. A journalist in 1920, it was a journal Nature talking about red energy. At that point, electromagnetism was called radiant energy. Actually, it was called red energy, not gold light. Okay, used that, and then eventually, later on, in 1934, the photon was widely used, and even Berkeley Celtron used to purify and characterize heavy water, all of articles related to them were using the wording atom. And in 1946, that term was pretty much known, and we have a photon as established term. Back to you.
Well, I mean, the term atom goes back 2,000 years. There was a kind of interesting atomic theory back among Greek philosophers. But getting back to Gilbert, you're quite correct. His middle name was Newton, but I don't think it has anything to do with his relationship with Isaac Newton. You know, they're separated by a century or something. And it was interesting to me as I looked up his parents. His father's name is Frank Wesley Lewis. So maybe you're related to him.
That was a good one. Thank you very much for that. Okay, so we could move to another one, but actually, it would be nice if we have a poll too. And the question is, we have a satellite, and what is the difference between satellite and satellite? What do you understand by the word satellite?
It looks like you have a lot of questions for Paul, and you're just kind of throwing them at me because he's not around.
I'm back, Roy.
Okay.
Okay, no.
There we go.
We have a whole bunch of questions for you.
The first question of mine. The first question of mine about propellers. You could, Dr. Roy, say a few words about it, and then the question related to ISS, because your English is much faster than mine. Back to you.
Okay. Leslie would like to know, what is the nature of the propellants of the escape vehicles on the ISS?
Okay. Now, what do you mean by the escape vehicles? You don't have actual escape. You actually have spacecraft that are docked to the space station. And for every person that's on board the space station, there has to be a seat. So if there's, let's say, six people up there, you have to have at least two spacecraft to carry at least three people each. In this case, we have seven people on board, so now you need... You know, one that's going to have full seats, like the drag spacecraft and the Soyuz spacecraft, so that would be three. And now what you have is on board right now is nine people, because now you have Starliner attached. So Starliner has the two seats available. And the flight rules are, you know, for everybody up there, you have to have a seat. In case there's a problem, fire, an ammonia leak, a glycol leak or something, you've got to temporarily evacuate the space station. Everybody has to be able to. So whatever propellant they have germane to whichever spacecraft we're talking about. So, you know, you have whatever thrust is that Starliner is using. They have a what the